This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm excited today to be joined by Micheline Davis. Micheline is at RWJ Barnabas Health System and a leader in talking about social determinants of health and a number of other issues. And we're so excited to have Micheline on the phone today. Micheline, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Oh, thank you so much, Scott. First of all, thank you for this opportunity and, of course, your interest in social determinants of health and really how we're facing them as an industry. Big fan of your work and the work that you do for our industry as well. I am the Executive Vice President and Chief Corporate Affairs Officer for RWJ Barnabas Health. It is the state of New Jersey's largest integrated academic medical center system. We have some 11 hospitals and ambulatory care centers, a number of pharmacies, some 9,000 doctors. So we are growing every day. No one knows better the M&A work that's happening in the industry across the nation than you do as you watch it so much and report out for the rest of us. And my role here, I drive something called social impact and community investment across the system, which deals with the social determinants of health, led by the policy arm through an equity lens.
Well, fantastic. And talk to us a little bit about, at some point, the discussion in healthcare, and it's really the last several years, has moved towards the importance of understanding the patient's entire life and where they come from and how those things impact health versus just treating them when they're in fact sick or have an issue. How did this conversation evolve, and how did this become such a major part of the understanding and dialogue in healthcare today?
Such a good question. So I really think that the reason why the discussion really evolved in the healthcare industry is because, quite frankly, we could no longer afford not to have the full discussion. We know that the U.S. spends nearly double per capita than any other developed country on healthcare, yet our health outcomes are, as a nation, are not reflective of the spend, right? So as we began to take that look at ourselves and, of course, the way in which we've been delivering healthcare over time, the natural knowledge of the fact that 80% of all of our health outcomes tend to be attributed to those things which happen outside of a clinical experience, we really had to begin having a dialogue around, so what role, if any, would we as healthcare delivery providers have in trying to ensure better socioeconomic, behavioral, or environmental factors. RWJBH, our acronym and other healthcare systems throughout the nation, had to move from a focus solely helping patients with chronic illness once they've come through their doors to really, what are we doing around addressing total health? How can we figure things out differently, whether or not our investment to date had been really addressing an effort to push back that tide. We know that food insecurity is linked to diabetes, obesity, heart disease. We know that as of 2018, I believe it's over 11% of all Americans were food insecure. And so what, quite frankly, was going to be our role in trying to address that to make certain that those healthcare outcomes were different, were better?
Thank you. And let me ask you a question. When you think about the social determinants of health, you're really talking about the person's entire life, their entire well-being. You mentioned it, whether it's food insecurity, housing insecurity, and so forth. What's the balance on the ability of major health systems, which themselves are major institutions, to really impact this issue? And I know some of the great effort systems like yours do, but do you ever look at this and think, is this a health system problem? Is this a government problem? How do we actually deal with this and make an impact?
Yeah. So I definitely have heard that discussion happening, and I will be very forthright with you and to let you know that I believe that it is a combination of all, right? It really needs to be a collaborative effort. There is no one healthcare system, no one hospital, no one governmental entity or health plan that can actually fully deal with every element of what most individuals reference as the social determinants of health. But I tend to refer to them oftentimes as the political or some people say structural determinants of health. And that is because So much of this really deals with how it is that we are shoring up those gaps that perhaps have been created historically inadvertently by the systems and laws and policies and practices that are already in place. So here's a good example. So clearly, there will be individuals in any particular hospital setting that might say, well, you know, isn't that outside of the purview of what it is as our mission, which is one of the reasons why we literally at RWJ Barnabas changed our mission to be so much more with laser focus aimed at this perspective. But also, you know, as an anchor institution, you know, what we decided is that there is something that we can do differently about whether or what not we hire from our local communities. Are we purchasing enough within our local economies? And are we investing in the things that really would help to shore up the socioeconomic status of those of whom we speak, even at this point? So I will tell you, you know, I think that it definitely is a collaborative effort. It happens in a collective impact methodology, right? No one entity can be responsible for, nor quite frankly, successful at trying to really change this solely in and of themselves. It requires many of the nonprofit organizations that are already in our communities doing great work, but it also requires us not to jump ahead of them, not to take over their mission and practice, but really, how do we engage with them in a way that truly meets the felt needs rather than just what we may decide that we want to do, right? What is that community evidencing to you that really they are in greatest need of, and how can we work collaboratively? Listen, we've just launched or just announced another housing effort in the South Ward of Newark just last Monday in partnership with the state of New Jersey and the city of Newark. We just announced our 60 to 70 unit housing development that going to go up in order to afford affordable housing units for many folks call them frequent flyers. We call them familiar faces, those individuals who frequently come into our emergency rooms, etc. But what's really key here is also making certain that we are utilizing this as an opportunity to provide workforce housing for individuals who we hire from that local community, because we want them to work with us and to grow up through the ranks, but we also want them not to leave the community, not to abandon the community, but to continue being there. And so we know that affordable housing is an element there, but we are not developers. So of course we had to partner with others in order to make certain that we could do this in the right way for us, in a manner that was sustainable for who we are as a hospital system, with those who do this work both in the ground and on throughout the community. So that's why I talk about it in that way. I don't think that there's any one entity that can be successful truly, Scott, alone.
Ms. Wing, thank you so much. Let's do this, because you've mentioned one of the magnificent projects you're working on. You've mentioned several other things. Talk to me about three projects, maybe, on the social determinant side. You talked about building housing in Newark, magnificent project. Maybe touch on one to three others that you're particularly excited about, and when you see the impact that RWJ Barnabas Health can make to the community. A couple of other examples. It's magnificent to hear them and the concreteness and the tangibleness of what an impact those can be.
Oh, thank you so much. I'd love to be able to share a little bit more with you about it. I'm going to utilize one that, if you look up our work, you see this all the time. There's a lot of mention about a particular greenhouse that we have in the space of food security, but I'm going to tell you why that's relevant and why, quite frankly, this is a good example of the model that we utilize. So we became the first hospital affiliated greenhouse in the state of New Jersey. I always say the first, but we're still actually the only. You know, we did what most hospitals do, right? We got together, we did a ribbon cutting, we took a picture, we pat ourselves on the back, but then we started to look at the utilization rate. And let me explain this to you. We located this greenhouse in the heart of the South Ward of Newark, exactly where we just talked about this housing announcement, because of the fact that it is both food desert and food swamp, right? Which means that while in fact there are no bases, no grocery stores where you can acquire fresh fruit and produce, what is there are lots of fast food restaurants, right? So you've got a fast food burger joint, which is next to, you know, a Dunkin' restaurant, but not a space where you can go in and honestly acquire a fresh apple, a fresh banana, lettuce, right? So as a result of that, we said, this is a prime place where this needs to be located. But quite frankly, what we also had to do was take a look at our utilization rates after a period of time. And what we saw was the fact that while this wonderful community invited us in order to literally raise the home that was there and then erect instead this greenhouse where we utilize it for everything from workforce development. There's a prison reentry training program that happens there. I mean, it's part of a behavioral health program as well. While it provides those opportunities, we also saw that it wasn't being frequently utilized. People weren't purchasing the fresh fruit and produce that we literally had subsidized through relationships with restaurants so that we could offer really this fresh fruit and produce to them at a very low rate. But what we had to do was to take a look at the policy side of it. And what we found was that we had 5,000 residents within this area who are on SNAP, right? So government subsidy. And as you know, SNAP stands for Supplemental Nutrition and Assistance Program. That caused us to take a step back, right, stop patting ourselves on the back and go in and work with the state government and the state agencies to literally change the law so that we would become the entity that would be able to receive SNAP certification there so that individuals could utilize their SNAP benefits in order to attain to this, but also to foster in discussions at the state and federal level with automatic WIC enrollment. Because what's really important here is not just that we create it for this one community, but quite frankly, that we remove the structural barriers across the state for others to be able to do the same, right? And so for me, that's a prime example of why when we say it is policy-led through an equity lens, why this work has to happen upstream in order for it to be sustainable downstream. So that's just one example. If I turn to another facility, I'll mention just about two or so weeks ago, we just had an announcement in partnership, again, because it's collaborative work, with the state of New Jersey's Office of the Attorney General around grants that we received because of our work as a hospital-based violence prevention initiative in Jersey City, New Jersey, and Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital in New Brunswick. These two facilities are trauma centers, and as a result of their designation as trauma centers and quite frankly because of the violence that occurs in those particular regions, you know, what we have found over time is the fact that oftentimes a hospital is placed in a unique situation as being both the healthcare provider to the victim and sometimes the assailant in a violent incident. So what can we do in order to intervene to bring about and usher in some prevention in that space? Delighted to be able to have this partnership with the state where they added to our efforts by giving us a large-scale grant in order to continue the work. You may recall as well, and I'm not certain when this will air, but quite frankly that unfortunately there was a recent situation of violence in Jersey City in particular. So it is of dealing with a mass shooting. And so as a result of that, you know, the importance of this cannot be underestimated. We have seen hospital-based violence prevention efforts like this drive down crime, violent crime in particular, in communities with vulnerable populations over time in a widespread manner, right? So that's another effort. One of my other favorites really deals with an initiative that we have of transitional housing at our facility based in Somerset, New Jersey, which is a different community, a more suburban. But one of the things that I love about the work that we lead is the fact that, you know, equity requires that everything be commissioned in a way that dignity is applied. And so we recognize that hunger, nor violence, nor economic disenfranchisement, really, they don't have a patient portfolio. They are present in just about every community, whether or not you can see it or not. And so as a result of that, we have cut the ribbon several months ago on transitional housing in Somerset community for families who have fallen on significantly hard financial times as a result of healthcare cost and really as a result of being compromised financially because of significant medical cost. We have a family there right now where the mother of the family suffered from significant cardiac issues, which made it impossible for her to work and to really keep a job. You know, we're working with this family over the course of 18 to 24 months in order to make certain that they have an opportunity to save because they live with us rent-free, but also we surround them with social services, which in order to ensure that they're sustainable once they leave us, work with them on everything from budgeting and financial planning to workforce development and job identification and attainment, right? So these programs are the types of programs that just come to mind at just first blush. My goodness, Scott, I could keep you on the line all day long talking to you about what we've done with housing vouchers and what we've done with our Kids Fit program in partnership with Wakefern, which owns ShopRite, so that we are literally making certain that we are educating folks around our Kids Fit curricula that was developed in partnership with Rutgers University around really how to eat very, very nutritiously on an incredible budget. But I won't take up your time with more of that until you ask me to. How about that?
No. It's literally, Ms. Lane, a magnificent commitment to community, and it's so remarkable and so admirable, the level of commitment needed, the amount of money put into the commitment, because at the end of the day, if you're not backing it up with the financial efforts, the staffing, the team, the efforts, it's all just talk. And so it's amazing what the system and what you are doing. It's really magnificent. And it'll be fascinating to see over the long run where this becomes more and more a part of the responsibility in communities of healthcare systems, of major corporations, but in not just a surface way, but in the deeper way that RWJBH is doing so. It's a magnificent thing. So, Ms. Lane, just a pleasure to have you on today. Just tell the audience how they can learn more about your system and what you're doing. Is there an easy way for them to learn more about the community efforts, the social determinants effort that RWJBH is after?
Oh, absolutely. They can visit our website at rwjbh.org and find the area for social impact and community investment and learn all about it, Scott. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. We appreciate you being on today so much. Thank you.
Thank you.